welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello. Welcome to episode 252 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal, Sean Orford. You all right?
I'm good.
Do you remember the radio station, Longwave Radio Atlantic 252? It's like a radio station
I can remember the long way, but I can't remember 252.
It's a radio station
from
my
childhood. It wasn't Luxembourg, was it?
No. Don't think so. No. We used to play rock, pop stuff. Right. I was like 13, 14. That was the main radio station of my life. Hey-ho.
So were they from a ship or from a land?
Long way. I don't know. I think it was just...
Because they were pirate radio stations.
It wasn't a pirate show, yeah. No, we're not talking about that today. We're talking about monogamy, aren't we? Relationships.
Yeah.
We've had an interesting email through from a listener, as we love to receive. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about in an upcoming episode, send us an email via the website, which is liveinthepresent.co.uk. If you stick your email address in one of the boxes, we'll send you weekly alerts for this show, and you get some free meditation files as well. Discount code for the book as well.
Yep.
10% off Live in the Present, the book. You can't beat it.
You can't, indeed.
Maybe we'll have a full-on radio station one day. What do you think?
What do you think?
I don't know.
252.
It's a lot of work. Yeah, maybe. How you doing, Sean? What have you been up to?
I'm good. It's been Easter, isn't it? So, epic. First year where Robert, son, was not present at the Easter dinner table.
Robert's son of Sean, wasn't there,
no,
hey?
No. So he was
growing up.
Yeah. He's out having a jolly with his loved one.
As he's entitled to do.
They had friends over, yeah. So, but it was quite profound, because it was like the first one, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have any Easter egg hunts or anything like that?
No, all the kids have gone, haven't they? They're all doing other stuff now. I mean, we need grandchildren to come in next, you see.
Yeah.
Get another wave of kids in.
Yeah, hang in there. That was my Easter egg hunt. Central, really, all over the show.
Yeah.
So much chocolate, it's crazy. Well, I did notice, actually, on my environmental quest, there's a lot less plastic in a lot of the boxes.
That's good.
Thornton's, if you're out there, you need to raise your game. That was plastic central. But all like the Malteser ones and what have you, it was like cardboard within cardboard. So, yeah.
I got a small box of handmade chocolates to go with some stuff that I got at Freestyle. And then she announced that because she's into a health kick and she's doing a lot of gym and stuff like that, she wasn't eating chocolate. So it's like, oh, okay, there you go.
Could have brought it in here.
I could have done, couldn't I? I suggested to her that she takes on one of her courses.
All right, very good. We'll crack on with the show, yeah, because we've had an email through from our listener. I'll read out the quote that she sent through the email. Interesting stuff. So the background is she's in a happy relationship, married, I think. Very happily married. Attracted to her partner still, which is cool. But for the last few months, I have been struggling with thoughts of intense physical attraction to someone at work. I have not experienced this before and have absolutely no intention of being unfaithful. No one is aware but me. Perhaps the other person as well. There's a bit of chemistry there. But at times, it is affecting my concentration at work. And I also feel terribly guilty. Nothing seems wrong with our relationship at home. We're a good team, enjoy each other's company. I still find him attractive. But how do I regain control of my mind and body and focus on my relationship and work as well? So, yeah.
Ta-da! Yeah, okay.
Over to you, Sean.
You're into one of those what your feet grows, what you start dies situations. Think of it like a radio. A radio is a box where sound comes out. But it comes out because it's got an aerial in it.
Yep.
And every radio signal, whether it is any, you know, television, police, aircraft, broadcast, goes through that aerial. But what comes out of the box is what you're tuned into.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you tune into another person, it's like when you're in that relationship where you're doing the wooing bit. You're tuning the dial, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you're starting to receive that person's signal. And what happens if you're in a main relationship where you're tuned in and then someone else comes bobbing along and you start to feel your dial shifting? Yeah, you've got a set of choices now. And you can either say, well, no, hang on, and you shift the dial back again, which means that do, that might mean that you need to pay more attention to your proper partner, as it were.
Yep.
Rather than this,
the main one,
this tuning thing going on. But it is a case of, if you do things like you find yourself meeting by the photocopier or the coffee machine, and you're kind of giggling and flirting and stuff like that, and then maybe you have to be aware of that and just kind of back off a bit.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, in many, many situations, it's that flirtatious part of social interaction that oils the wheels of an organisation or a society. And we're in a very odd place socially at the moment, where everybody is becoming hyper-politically correct. We're not allowed to say things to people anymore. And you'll probably find that when people are unable to be playfully flirtatious, that societies or teams start to crack a bit.
Yeah, is that a fine line between flirtation and having a bit of fun, and then obviously sexual harassment, which is
the big deal, isn't it? Yeah.
Which ain't cool. I want to start, before we get really into this, like, do you think humans are designed to be with just one person?
No. There's loads of things that you could look at that would suggest that, which go from the idea that now that we can read genomes, we know that in some areas up to 30% of children do not belong to the father who thinks he is the father.
30%?
30%, up to 30%.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Now, but we also know alongside that, if you look at the research, and the stats will vary depending on which research you read, but between 50 and 60%, say, of people have an affair at some point during their mainline relationship. Yeah, doesn't mean to say everybody does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a high percentage that do, which would account for the 30% of kids that don't belong. So my thing now, when I see a ginger-headed kid sat at the table and everyone says, oh, it's a throwback to Auntie Nelly, I'm thinking, maybe.
Yeah. My kids look nothing like me. They got blonde hair, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
So I think that the idea of monogamy is probably something that came about by the Abrahamic religions.
Yeah, the social
Judaism,
structures
Islam,
we have in
Christianity.
Developed over time for good reason, I'm assuming, on the whole.
I think that it was probably to do with social control that monogamy developed. And if you look at it, when you look at laws and the structure of laws, law is all about inheritance, it's all about property, mm-hmm. And it developed out of all those needs to prove who you belong to.
Yeah.
So that whole idea about creating a society around a structure that people could relate to. So my thing is, we know who the next king's going to be because he's in line, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's only because there's a family that we call the royal family that we can see who's in line.
Yeah.
But we're all part of a family.
It's about responsibility as well, though, isn't it? Obviously, so I'm responsible for my kids.
Yeah.
At the moment, till they reach a certain age, etc. I'm responsible for this little patch of land or that little patch of land that I call home.
Yeah.
To keep it in good nick.
And then there comes the point where you come to the end of your life, and then it becomes inherited by someone else in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's only because of monogamy that you have that family structure and you have the legal structures and the laws, because without that, it'd be a free-for-all.
Yeah, well, would it be a free-for-all? Are there any communities, like large-scale communities, that do things completely different on planet Earth that I should have researched before I
I don't know the reality of that. I mean, I know that there are different attitudes in different countries. Like some of the Polynesian islands have the thing where a boy, as he got into puberty and became a man, would be taken on by an older woman as an apprentice and taught how to do things sexually.
Okay.
And it was seen as like passing on a craft,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So I mean, there are different attitudes around, obviously, to sexuality and to
and within different
relationships,
faiths and religions. That, you know, you're allowed, inverted commas, a certain number of wives, etc. It's never like wives are never allowed more than one hubby.
No, that's it, isn't it? Yeah.
Is that right?
But in the Mormons, Mr. Smith that started it all was reputed to have 40 wives. So So he probably had a lot of kids. In Islam, you can have, in both Sunni and Shia sects, you can have four wives. No, so, I mean, yes, it's given.
But a wife can't have four hubbies?
No.
Okay. A bit of a mismatch there.
Yeah.
Not that she'd want four. Imagine having four fellas to look after. Sheesh.
Yeah. And I read a thing once which is contrary to that, which was there were three brothers in China that were farmers and they couldn't afford a wife and they bought one wife between them. Mm. So I guess that is a woman with three.
Yeah, but we are obviously reaching a point of evolution, human evolution, where, well, certainly in the UK there is a movement and throughout the West to try and equalise and normalise equal rates of pay between male and female, that kind of thing, the Me Too campaigns, all the news, the Harvey Weinstein stuff about sexual harassment, and that obviously goes much deeper into the world of probably politics and all business, really. How men have kind of used their power and authority is crumbling and coming to an end. And in fact, it was kind of, I guess that's linked to what we talked about last week in terms of male suicide rates, because it's kind of a big crisis of masculinity at the moment.
But that power that men have held over other people isn't just women. It's other countries, you know, slaves, everything.
Yeah. I mean, but throughout the EU, there's an article I'm going to link to in the show notes. I'll be on the site about how Britain has the highest divorce rate in the EU. But even within the European countries, there's a big... Like in Greece, only 4% of births are outside of marriage, whereas in Sweden, it's 55%. It's a huge... But generally, we will look to the Nordic countries, Scandinavian countries, as kind of forward-thinking in terms of education and relationships and just...
I wonder how... I don't know how long those stats have been true, but I wonder how that affects inheritance law. Because if you haven't got a monogamous culture, a monogamous structure... Does that mean that people would end up having to rely on DNA tests to prove their inheritance to something? And you might think that you are related to somebody, but when you have the DNA test, you suddenly discover that you're not, and you don't have any inheritance rights.
Bombshell. Yeah, it's bombshell stuff, isn't it, man?
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge, huge issue.
Yeah. But what about the different types of relationships that are open to people, obviously... In terms of all the different things that end in E, polyamory, I've got one written down, obviously bigamy.
Well, you got...
Have you worked with people of all different shapes and sizes and relationship types?
Yeah. I work with one lady who actually gives lectures on polyamory.
Polyamory, okay. Which one's that then?
Well, let's go through them. You got monogamy. The gammy is Greek for marriage.
Okay.
So monogamy is one marriage, polygamy is several people. So that in a polygamous marriage, people like men have several wives, but very rare for a woman to have more than one husband. In polyamory, it's usually described as a consensual relationship because everybody knows what's going on. So you may be in a relationship with one person, and that may be your main relationship, but you openly have sexual relationships with other people as well that may also be ongoing.
Yeah.
So there may be someone who is polyamorous who has one main relationship and maybe two other relationships or another relationship that are very deep and long-lasting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't... I take it it doesn't work if one person is monogamous... and the other person is polyamorous, or can contracts be written up and drawn up?
I think that there are as many varieties as there are people. But it's like, it's what works for you, doesn't it? It's like, if what you and your partner do is okay between you, then that's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, then that's okay, yeah. When you get into things like open relationships, is where, whereas polyamory is usually about couples interacting, just as twos, when you get into open relationships, that's when you get the ménage à trois, where you might get three people in the bed or more, which could build up to whole kind of orgy-type situations. So it's much more kind of pick-and-mix kind of world. Open, anything goes, whereas in a polyamorous relationship, usually there is still a structure. to it. Yeah, and so and because it, in the polyamorous relationship it's all open, then in theory no one can get hurt.
There are still rules. It's not just a complete free for all. Bringing a different person home every night of the week.
And so some people would want to meet the people that other the partners, other partners. Whereas other people wouldn't want to at all.
If your partner has found someone else that they get on with, there's a good chance that you will also get on with that person. So you, I don't know. In an ideal world, everyone would be getting on with each other, wouldn't they? It's nice and open. I guess the breakdown comes when feelings are hidden and held, and surprises are found out, and then that's when it's like, oh, he didn't tell me about that, and it's game over.
Yeah. But one of the things I'm interested in that kind of bit of the world of research is where does the genetic part and the learned part mix? So we get people talking about the selfish gene, which I talk about in the blog, where the idea is that every individual has an inner urge to reproduce and to get their genes out there. So that the idea that people would want to go and spread their genes as far as possible goes right against the idea of monogamy. And I think we talked about it before, that in a sexual interaction, the chemistry that's released by the man usually sends him to sleep, and the chemicals that are released by the woman tends to wake her up. One of the things that's suggested is that in sexual interactions, women can be very noisy, and men are much quieter. Unless they're shouting Geronimo or something. But the idea is that the woman is advertising the fact that she's fertile. So the man goes to sleep.
Far and wide.
Yeah, so the man in the trope goes to sleep, having done his business, which then means that she's open for any for all comers or whatever.
So these are rules that are seen throughout the animal kingdom.
You can see them in more kind of primate situation. So the idea of you've got an alpha male, who once the alpha male is satiated and is in the corner, all the secondary guys can come in and go, hiya.
All right, then. Well, getting back onto our listener then. How do we combat these feelings of guilt?
Well, I think that the first thing,
because that's not going to go away either way, even if she was to completely move desks and not see this person she's working with ever again, she's still going to have feelings of guilt that need to be dealt with.
The first thing is that that what she's experiencing is completely normal. There's nothing abnormal in what she's spending. She's not doing anything wrong or bad or anything like that. She's being a human being. Now, I find it hard to believe that there's anybody listening to this who at some time hasn't driven down the road or sat on a bus or done something and seen another person other than their partner and thought, "Whoa, they look nice." Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there's been some level of attraction there.
Yep.
I think that is the normality of being a human being. I think it's how we work. And the idea that there is a person for a person is a kind of nice idea, but I don't kind of get that so much.
Yeah, I can't. But I've been asked that by my wife as well. You know, it's a kind of a ridiculous notion, really, because I'm obviously very happily married. But I've got friends. All our little friend network of five or six couples, we're all happily married, but the idea that we all found that one person that just happened to live within a 1 or 2 mile radius of where we live kind of blows the theory out the water that there is one person out there for it. There must be hundreds, thousands, even just like in Merseyside, the potential suitors for us all, eh?
Yeah. The issue.
So you're going to run into people that you're attracted to a lot through life, aren't you?
Yeah. And that's not the issue. It's like the whole mindfulness thing. It's not what happens, it's how you respond to it.
Yeah.
Isn't it? So what this lady has written in, she's got a choice. That's the mindfulness. To be mindless means you just go with your instincts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To be mindful means that you observe what you're going to do before you do it. So it's a response rather than a reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that she's at that choice point. And on the basis that what you feed grows, what you starve dies, if you spend your life focusing on something, and we know from the neuropsychology that to imagine something is no different in your brain to actually doing it. You're still creating the same neural net. Yeah.
Okay.
So the issue is, if you find yourself unable to let go of thoughts or feelings or ideas, you have to treat it like you're a drug addict, you know, and you have to separate yourself from the source of the substance.
Yep.
Yeah, and focus on other things, like mindfully observe, don't run with it, let it go, go and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what you're doing when you do that, it comes into your mind, you let it go, you go and do something else, comes into your mind, you let it go, you go and do something else. And what you're doing is you're turning the dial on your radio. So you're tuning out of those feelings and emotions.
But the feelings that we're dealing with here and our listener is dealing with on it, probably for 8 hours of her day.
Yeah.
It's Monday to Friday, I'm assuming. Oh, it's a pretty strong signal, isn't it? It's pretty. Mm-hmm. Is it almost impossible to tune out?
No. You can do anything, can you? But one of my teachers, a guy called Neil French, who was taught analytical hypnotherapy, he would talk about the transference that you get in a therapeutic relationship. And that transcends all kinds of boundaries, because you'll get a female client who suddenly finds themselves dreaming erotically about a female therapist. Yeah, and they've never been lesbian. Yeah, all the same with fellas, or it's cross gender.
Mm-hmm.
So, when people start to get erotically fascinated with the therapist, in what's known as transference, then that the therapist could be, you know, 100 years old, and the client is kind of 20. Hmm. But suddenly the client finds themselves having erotic imagination about the therapist. And it's not the person, it's the role.
Yep.
And very often that's what we're attracted to. So certainly in the first instance, what someone looks like. Yeah. Although we're not aware of it, it's what they smell like, which is why perfumes are such a big industry.
Yep.
Yeah. And then it's body language, there's all kinds of stuff that's in that tuning process. But if you can accept the fact that you're going to find loads of people out there attractive, go out there and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean to say enjoy them.
Well,
just enjoy that feeling. It's okay, there's some good-looking people around.
This the lady that's emailed us, it can be quite easy to assume that you're the only person feeling this thing, but the likelihood is that her partner, husband, where I'm not sure, husband or boyfriend, is either having or has had similar feelings about other people at his place of work or in other, his other.
Hmm.
So is it important to kind of remember that, not so that you can feel jealous about what he's done, but just that we're all having these feelings all the time anyway?
Normalise it. It's normal.
Yeah.
No, which means it's not a bad thing. And, you know, again, it's like it's not what happens, it's how you respond. Yeah, so that there's a consequence to action. So it could be that if you do choose to follow up on those feelings that you have for another person, that the result of that is that it wrecks or brings the current relationship to a close, which may be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at it. You know, but it's accepting the consequence of action, but doing it from the point of your choice. I mean, this lady's obviously registered and thought, hang on, you know, what should I be doing here?
Yeah, for sure.
Which is a good place to begin. Okay, so now the issue is, what do I want? What do I really want? And if I can answer that question, okay, what do I need to do to achieve what I want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are the little things in life that make life worth living, aren't they? I know, obviously, it's a tricky decision. Well, not that it is a decision, but maybe it is. You know, maybe that life could be incredible with this other person, or maybe not. I don't know, man. You've just got to do the work and figure it out, haven't you?
Yeah. And I have worked with many people that have done the grass is greener stuff and gone off with another person in the belief that it was going to be amazing, only to regret it later.
Mm-hmm.
And then to discover that it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to kind of backtrack and go back, and didn't work.
Yeah, learn some hard lessons, eh?
Yeah. So, but we have all those phrases in our society, like better the devil you know, and everyone's got their cross to bear, which are all ways that we use to lock ourselves into the situation of solid structure,
mm-hmm.
which is what society is built on.
Do you think marriage is on the way out? It might take 100 years, well, but do you think in 100 years people will still get married?
I think that the concept of marriage will change, but I think that the idea of having another person won't change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I mean, I don't know how many people these days have religious marriage-type ceremonies or indeed religious death ceremonies. You know, there's more and more humanist stuff going on.
Yeah.
There's a couple that I know recently who did go through a binding ceremony, which effectively is a pagan ceremony, the equivalent of a marriage, where you symbolically are bound together at the wrist with another person. But there's the difference would be that in a binding ceremony, you decide what the rules or the laws are of your contract with that person, whereas when you go for a religious ceremony, it's a preordained written script that you're going for. You might be able to add some things in, but essentially it's the same kind of contract for everybody.
Hmm.
Whereas in a more of a pagan binding ceremony, you choose what the agreement is that you're having with this other person.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Hmm.
Hmm, interesting stuff. All right, well, I think this listener, hopefully we've been of some use. But drop us an email in a few months and let us know how you've progressed with this one, which direction you've taken and how it's worked out.
Yeah, and I guess the live action of how are you dealing with it, how have you dealt with it, how did it work for you would be good feedback for everybody.
Definitely. Yeah, fascinated about that one. Have you got a resource?
Well, I'm going back to one of my older books, which is What Colour Is Your Necroelastic? And the elastic
classic
in question is the emotional connection that we have with each other. And it's how do you make, break or maintain a relationship? That's what the book's about.
Cool.
So it could be useful.
For sure. I want to mention a movie I saw at the weekend called Wonder, which isn't too related to this topic, but it's about a kid with a facial disfigurement. Who starts school, he's about 8, maybe 8 or 9, I don't know what level, in America. It's an American movie. Owen Wilson is the dad in it, but pretty amazing man, really powerful.
Right.
But feel good movie as well, so check it out.
Good.
Wonder. Okay, we'll be back next week with more fun and games. What we've actually got next week's topic lined up. What are we talking about?
Yeah, what are we talking about?
The meaning of life.
Of life.
The
indeed.
Meaning of life. Easy. So we'll crack that one. So definitely worth listening to because obviously we will. We've got it sorted, me and you, haven't we, Sean?
Completely.
Easy. Until then, take it easy. Live in the present. .co.uk for all the show notes and links. And do drop us an email or a message on one of our social media channels if you'd like us to discuss something in particular. Have a good week, Sean.
And you. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.